welcome to the teaching ministry of North Coast Church in Vista, California. We invite you to please open your Bibles as we join Pastor Chris Brown for today's message.
As he clears his account at the lodging, he leads a little bit more than an extra tip. I mean, after all, he's in the capital. With what the day holds, there's this feeling of nationalism and generosity. Not quite sure how long the trip would take. He's been there two nights just to make sure he didn't miss it. That was made clear. No one's allowed to miss it. And there he shakes the hand of the clerk and grabs his pack and he heads outside. The camera will show us a sea of sandals all heading in the same direction. Once in a while, a cartwheel will go by. Once in a while, different hoofs of different animals that are being ridden are pulling. And everyone seems to be leaving the city. Many of those residents of, many of those like our first gentleman, have come and stayed the night in anticipation for this day. And as you move outside the southern gate, the little cobblestone road is packed with now people in the same direction. And there's this carnival-like atmosphere that's taking place. Anytime there's a crowd in one direction, well, there's an opportunity to sell. There's an opportunity to make money. And the booths are set up. Anything, trinkets, souvenirs, anything that you want to eat or drink along the way, everyone's got their wares out there. Every beggar, every gimmick, every sideshow is set up to catch this huge crowd that's going to be leaving. It's a short journey, and on that journey, strangers start conversations. There's a common bond that's uniting them on this short little pilgrimage, and so along the way, the expectation increases and conversation happens. Any idea what this is about? Any clue what waits ahead? Everyone has an idea of what could be, what might be, considering everyone's been summoned by the most powerful man in the known world at that time. Everyone carries a position of some sort in this new world empire. And the greatest and oldest city of Babylon is now open to gate and let all those with titles and positions to march forward. The conversation and anticipation is also mixed with the curiosity of what could be and what lies ahead. And all conversation stops as a few hills away. As they break it, they look down into the plain of Dura, and there it is. Already the mid-morning sun is glaring off of it, and it's unmistakable, it's undeniable, you can't miss it. And every eye looks at it, and every sentence that was being spoke comes to an end, and people walk in silence. It's crowd nature. You try to get as close as you can, you know that. And so from the front of the stage back, everyone just starts packing in. And there you stand and stare. It is 90 feet tall. It is 9 feet wide. It is gold. It is a statue. The stage next to it is set up with the band. People of prominence are sitting on the stage. And everyone comes close. Now everyone's wondering, what do we do here? What's it about? What's it for? Is this political? Is this spiritual? What is going to be asked of us? Conservative estimates, the most conservative, will say there's 15 to 20,000 that showed up that day. With the census taken at the time and understanding the expanse of Babylon, this kingdom, it could be about 150 to 200,000 people, and everyone stands and waits. Whatever your thoughts of what's about to happen, they quickly come to an end as a herald stands up and the PA systems back there are weak, probably more of a big bullhorn type effect, and the shout comes out. The music will be played! And when the music plays, everybody must bow to the statue that Nebuchadnezzar has made. If you refuse to bow, you will be burned alive. Any questions? Good. We'll get started in a few minutes. Feel free to talk amongst yourselves. And now everyone knows why they've been summoned. We're not given for sure exactly why. I don't think it's to set up a new religion and a new world theology or philosophy. It seems more political than anything. If you're just joining us, young King Nebuchadnezzar has taken over the throne of his father. He has come back from one of the greatest victories in our history. 605 BC in a little town called Carchemish, up on the western side of the Euphrates River in a place that we would now call Turkey. And there, with one great big battle, Babylon as a nation has overtaken, pursued, and defeated the Assyrian army, which will never gain power again in the world empire structure, and has chased Egypt all the way back to the northern continent of Africa. Egypt, never again will gain world power domination in the Middle East, Near East, or Far East. And Babylon will hold claim to, for the most part, the known world, or at least the Western known world at that time, and will set itself up as the greatest empire, with one of the greatest cities of the world as its capital. What do you do when you have everything made and everything done? Well, you make sure that you rule with an iron fist, and that's Nebuchadnezzar. Now he set up a statue. Now everyone's invited. And now maybe I think it's just to unite the entire kingdom. It's a political stand of loyalty. Yeah, it's a form of worship, but we have a lot of gods. But everyone has to be invited that has a position. And Nebuchadnezzar has to know everyone bows to me in my authority. Well, if you look on your note sheet, it's chapter 3, and if you're just joining us, you missed chapter 1 and 2, so we'll sum it up real quick. After that great battle, Babylon has chased Egypt all the way back through a little nation called Israel. They basically are right in the middle of the trade routes. It's a key piece of land, and so they overtake the nation, they besieged it, they turned the city into rubble, they took all the treasures from their temple, put it into Babylon's temple, and they took back some captives, just to make sure no one tries to rebel, because we have your people. We heard the philosophy of Babylon. Babylon prides itself on looking youthful, on great hard bodies, on good looks, and making sure that you offer something to the rest of society. That's what's highly prized. And so they pick those that are most capable of filling those roles, and they put them in Babylon University, a 3-year university, to teach you sorcery, magic, astronomy, astrology, to teach you the political system and the mathematics. You realize Babylon at that time is the greatest literary center in the known world also, so they have a lot to teach. It's basically indoctrinating them to your country. We've swallowed you up. Think like us, act like us, be like us, live like us. We'll even change your names, get rid of your gods, accept our gods. And on the first day of school, we find 4 young men that take a stand, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who say, look, we may be in your world. We may be of Babylon right now, but it's not going to be in us. And we're going to draw the line in the sand. This we will not do. The guard shows favoritism to, and instead of cutting off their heads and lets them go, and God blesses them, and they end up graduating the top of their class. Chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream of a great big statue, a head of gold, arms and chest of silver, a belly of bronze, legs of iron, feet of iron and clay, and the statue comes at him. A big rock comes and obliterates the statue, and Nebuchadnezzar wakes up. And somehow in his head, he knows that's about me. So he calls all the wise men in town and says, look, tell me my dream and the interpretation, or you all die. And they say, facing death, we cannot do it. And we looked last week at a world saying, facing death and the hard questions of life, the very, very best the world has to offer in religion and philosophy, are still going to leave you with unanswered questions. Except 4 that said, we don't have the answer, but we know a God who can. And Daniel tells the king his dream and the interpretation. King, you dreamed. You're the head of gold. You're great. But after you will come another kingdom, the Medo-Persian, I believe he's talking about. After that's going to come the Greeks and Alexander the Great. After that's going to come Rome and its Caesars. And then after that, that rock you saw, that's not human. That's a God thing. See, God has an eternal plan. Everything you do is temporary. Well, what do you do after a dream like that? Well, the king gives Daniel and his buddies some high positions in the greatest empire in the known world. The king's got to think for a while, this is really cool. God gave me a dream, showed me I'm the head of gold. I'm pretty awesome. There's going to be other things that follow, other kingdoms. What do you do after God's given you something cool? Well, if you're like Nebuchadnezzar, if you're like me, you end up turning it about you. That's where our story starts. Daniel chapter 3. If you haven't opened up, go ahead. If you're flipping and finding it, Psalms in the middle of the Bible, it's 150 chapters, you can't miss it. You can flip through and find peace Psalms. To the right, the next 3 biggest books, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. And right after Ezekiel is Daniel. There's some little books in there, but you'll hit those if you're flipping. To the right of Psalms, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, then Daniel, chapter 3. Are we ready? Good. Glad both of you are here. This is good. Daniel, chapter 3. You already saw the scene. Let's set it up as the Bible tells it. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 90 feet high, 9 feet wide, and set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned all the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image that he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image of King Nebuchadnezzar that he stood up before it. Verse 4. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, this is what you are commanded to do, O people of nations and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace. I mean, get it. You got any position in the kingdom, you're invited. You show up, there's this 90-foot image. It's probably not solid gold. What we know of archaeology, what we know of even the way some of the artifacts, the gold stuff in the temple of God was made, it's made of wood and then it's gold-plated. I'm sure it wasn't 90 foot by 9 feet solid gold. That's a lot of bling. It's probably wood. It's just plated. And then Nebuchadnezzar, after looking at that, realizes his rule expands at least 500 miles in every direction. He's like, man, I got to get everybody in. I'm going to unite the Middle East, the Near East, the Far East, all the way down to Southern Europe, all the way to Africa and Asia. I want to unite everyone under my rule. I'm going to get them all together and bow to this sucker. Man, I'm good. So everyone shows up. The guy says you got to bow and worship his image or you die. Okay, got the scene. Therefore, as soon as they heard of the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, lyre, as soon as the band started playing, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. You might want to underline every if you like writing your Bible like I do. All the nations and men of every language. That's going to be critical in just a second. What possesses a guy to make a 90-foot statue of gold? Have you ever just stopped? Some of you that might have been brought up in church and Sunday school, you're like, oh, this is the fiery furnace one. I know this one. We should have stayed home. Okay. You might have heard this as little kids, but I promise you, the story was not meant for second graders. Don't get me wrong, Sunday school teachers. I'm glad we're teaching our little kids the Bible stories. But this is an adult story with adult context. And it's got adult applications. And you got to stop and go, why does a dude spend 90 foot by 9 feet of gold on a statue? A 3-foot statue would have gotten the point across. It might have been hard to see from the back row, but just put it on something. I mean, what? Until, in context, as we've been following the story, you understand chapter 2. He had a dream of a statue of gold, silver, bronze, and iron. And Daniel said, God told you this dream to let you know you're the head of gold. But other kingdoms will come. You are temporary. God said, here is my script, and you're allowed to write your own script. But yours will be temporary. If you want to join mine, which is eternal, you're allowed to do it. It's the same choice you and I have today. You want to live your life, and you want to be the image in your show and the star of the show, you're allowed to. And God said, it is temporary. You're great. It's a massive empire. It's better than any businesses you guys will ever build or run. It is dominating the known world. You have a capital like Babylon. Great. I applaud you. It's temporary. The Medo-Persian army will come. In about 40 to 50 years from this time, they did. Cyrus the Great will rule. Alexander the Great will come. Roman and Caesars will come. 900 years before it happened, Daniel said, that's what God's telling you. It's temporary. But he's going to set up a kingdom that lasts forever. You want in? Nebuchadnezzar, here's what I think. It's not in the Bible, so it's just a guess. But here's what I think, because it makes sense. He's got to be sitting around going, man, I was the head of gold. That's pretty cool. Why couldn't I be a whole statue of gold? How come I don't have significance? How come what I'm doing doesn't last forever? I want to do something that has no limits to it, no end. I want to be great. Have you been there? What if the whole statue was gold? Ding! What if the whole statue was gold? 90 foot tall, 9 feet wide. Archaeology will tell us, because somebody goes, that's extreme. I don't think that actually happened. There's actually two statues that are taller than that are found before this time period. And there's several in the 50-foot range that have been discovered. So it's not out of the ordinary. This guy just wants to outdo it. Once again, God has a plan, but you can run by your plan. And Nebuchadnezzar says, I want to make it about me. I want to be the star of the show, and I want everyone to know it. So everyone come. When the band plays, you bow down. If you don't, there's a furnace. Any questions? Let's go. Okay, now we're good. Verse 8. At this time, some astrologers came forward, and they denounced the Jews. And they said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship your image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews who you set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. By the way, they're Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold that you have set up. You get the story. Band plays. It's like a wave. I'm sure it starts at the front of the stage and works its way back because people in back probably can't even hear the sound at this point. If there is roughly 20,000 to maybe 150,000 people, we've got to picture that. Picture a large football stadium, a coliseum, if you will, filled with people. At the end, there's a statue. Guys around it start playing. Everyone just bows down. Does King Nebuchadnezzar know that there are three guys who are still standing? No. Doesn't have a clue. Until they're snitched on. In a football stadium, if everyone sits down, you don't immediately know, oh, Section 124, Row G, 1920 and 21, I think they're standing. In that sea of people, you couldn't possibly tell unless you're in that section. Which tells me a couple things. One, of course, they're standing. We'll get to that in a second. Two, they're being watched. Because people, I promise you, it is the same with the world today. The moment you have a declaration of being a Christian, the moment they find out you go to church, the moment they assume that you think you're better, more righteous than they are, because that's going to be the world's perspective of Christianity, doggone it, I think we've earned that lousy title at times. The moment you set yourself apart, I promise you there will be people in your section, in your cubicles, in your work that report to you or you report to that are going to be watching. Haven't you found that to be true? A word, a slip in the conversation, something like, oh man, I thought you were Christian. You said that. And you're like, shut up. Why don't you say that to everyone in the offices? You say, yeah, but you're a Christian. Is that the way a Christian speaks? Your own family, getting an argument, everyone's fighting. But the moment you jump in because you're the Christian, they throw that back at you, don't you? Oh, you're supposed to be a Christian. And look, you're like, I'm going to hit you with the Christian fist. Shut up! It's thrown back at you. They stand. Guys run up. Oh, king, live forever. You had a decree. We heard it. You know, the music played. Everyone bows. If not, you get in the fire. There are some Jews. The Jews. There are those that believe there is one true God, not like all of our hundreds of gods. There are those that believe they have truth. And that's threatening to us in our society. And we sat behind them just in case something like this happened. By the way, their name's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. People, I promise you, the moment you start taking a stand for God, there will be people that will try to tear you down. It's the way the world was then. It's the way the world is now. Jesus was killed and crucified by those that were closest to him. He was betrayed by one of the innermost 12. It was his religious system that decided to put him on that cross. And it was his national people that voted to release the convicted criminal and send him to death. It is that way. Now, my question is, what was the conversation on those three dudes? Because they prayed and helped interpret the dream in chapter 2, they're given a position. I don't know what the position is, but they show up. Everyone has to show up. They're standing there, and they hear what happens. What's that? Something about, shut up, listen. Band's playing. Everyone bows to his image, and if not, you die. This is going to hurt. Man, I'm glad I came with you two. We're going to Rochambeau for this one. Rock, scissors, paper. What's the conversation like there? Now I want to be sitting in what it was, Section 124, Row G, 1920, 21. I want to be in seat 23 and be listening. Is there a conversation? Is there a decision to be made? Do you realize all the ways you can compromise on this one? People, I just thought for a few seconds, and I found many ways out on this one. Real quick, because I'm a quick thinker. It's like... Okay, guys, when everyone goes and bows the image of gold, we're just going to bow and pray to God. You ready? What's that? They're playing. Here we go. God, we're serving you, and that stupid statue means nothing to us. And we just want you to know that. Everyone's standing. That wasn't bad. It's pretty good. Because I've been trained in my culture how to look as much like the world and be part of it as I can. On the inside, I will claim Christ and being a Christian. But outwardly, man in the crowd, you're not going to know that. Man in the crowd, in the office, in the workplace, man in the marketplace with my families or in my relationships, by what I choose to entertain myself with and what I choose to do, you are not going to be able to discern that there is a different God in my life. Because I have learned the art of kneeling on the outside to be like the crowd. And yet inside telling myself, man, you're God, you're in my life. You're, I mean, that's where I go on the weekends. Psh. And the world will make it easy. Don't think about it. Just bow. There's consequences if you don't. Psh, put it out of your mind. Every language is doing it. The other Jews are doing it. The other captives that were put into a class and given some position in the kingdom, they are doing it. It's the way things are done. It's standard operating procedures for our business. If you lose your shirt on one deal, you stab the next guy and make it up. That's the way it works. That's just business. There's some gray areas, we call them, and we're just allowed to fudge a little here and there. That's the way it's done. Oh, but I'm still a Christian. And day in and day out, we find ourselves in situations where it's the way the world works. It's how you get ahead. It's how everyone does it. And I find three that say, we may be in your kingdom, but we're not of it. We have a higher God, and his standard is what governs our life. And when you say bow, or everyone's doing it, and it doesn't mean anything, not for us. That's the way it is. Whoa, you realize what people are going to think? You realize how much you might lose on the bottom line? Do you realize you might lose your job for that? Do you realize that relationship might be ended unless you're giving in? Do you realize there are consequences, and it's such a little thing? And I'm sure the conversation could have gone, hey, come on, guys. I mean, God brought us through slavery. We're in captivity, but he kept us through college. He's given us a great education. He's given us a position. I'm sure he didn't give us all that just to throw it away right now. That doesn't sound like God. And there's a lot of ways out. I'm not going to worship, but the music plays, and I'm just like, oh, look, pennies. Hey, guys, there's a couple pennies down here. Look at that. That was pretty good. It's the day I wear my sandals that always come untied. And the music plays. I'm like, look at that. Gotta get that done, son. We're good. We're good. Because from high school on, I was taught the game. It's okay if you want to call yourself a Christian. Just don't let it affect the way you go with the flow in the crowd. They are willing to be set apart. They are willing to be discovered. And they are. Man, that takes guts. From a king-size ego to a compromising situation, the question simply, man, when it comes to idols we bow to, what do you have in your life? An idol is simply whatever you obey, whatever is that chief motivating factor for you. Whatever when it comes down to how you set your schedule and your finances, because those are the two areas that show what we follow. When you do that, what is it that's always going to make sure this is what we're about? We have different idols. We have reputation and ego. The way I'm seen, the way I'm thought of, my image. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar is about. This is my image. And God forbid people start seeing the tarnishes, the hurts, the scrapes, the pains in my image. Outwardly, man, I got to portray gold. I don't care if it's a bunch of wood nails on the inside that's creaking and hurting right now. It's about my image. And I'm not going to let that go down. Success is another idol we bow to. Man, it's about the buck. It's about the bottom line. It's about my position. It's about my title. It's about the applause I get. That's why I will spend far more time in the marketplace than I will at home. Because at home, I don't feel like I'm being a great husband. At home, I don't feel like I'm being a great dad. And at home, I don't get the respect that the people in the marketplace give me because of my title. So I'll spend more and more time in that arena because that's where my applause comes from. Because that's what I pursue. And I don't want to show people the effects it's having inside here. I'll give them the image of success. And so many times, men and women, we will choose that. That is what motivates us. That is what drives us. And last week we saw, man, that is the temporary. That has nothing to do with the eternal. Our own sexuality, our lust, when it comes to what God says, man, it's my desires and my lust. That's what I'm going to choose. when it comes to that situation or whether I give in or not, well, for the sake of the relationship and being loved, man, that's where I'm giving in. When it comes down to just being one click away, well, man, that's where I'm giving in. That's what I choose. What is it that you choose over God? That is your idol. For some of it's great things, just like family. That's who I will lie for. That's who I'll cheat for. I will say, man, that's what I work everything and give everything for, so I don't have time for God's kingdom of giving or for service. There are so many different forms and shapes to idols coming today. No one says, Chris, here's a 90-foot image, bow. But Babylon throws at me constant things that say, what is the motivating factor? What is the decision-making factor in your life? That is the idol. And three guys in the crowd say, it is my God. Regardless of right now, my vocation, our families, our futures, our career, regardless of my life, that is the factor. And people, I will say today, as much as I joke about it, I do not believe they had a decision to make that day. I think that decision was made two chapters ago, the first day of school at Babylon University. When the Bible said they purposed in their hearts, they made a firm conviction that I will follow God regardless. And that day showing up, there wasn't a discussion. That day showing up, the knees must have been shaking, the palms were sweating. That day, I'm sure they were trying to encourage each other. Meshach, are you standing? Meshach, are you up? Dude, tell me you're up. If you're going down, I'm going down. Meshach, you're up, right? You're up. You're with me on this. Dude, people are starting to look. Oh, man, those guys are looking at me. You're up. Shady, Slim Shady, please stand up. Please stand up. Shady, you with me? Good. We're with me. Okay, we're in. Bad attempt. And we find in a football stadium in Section G or Section 124, Row G, 1920 and 21, three guys that said, I've made a decision. And people, we have to be a people that say, if I'm a Christian, I have given God lordship of my life, complete control of my life. We call it here, I've given him the steering wheel. I will not take that back in situations. I have to set that up ahead of time before I get into the boardroom, before I get in that situation, before I'm in that financial spiral, before I'm in that relationship, before I click on that, before I am one step away from that relationship, before I get there, I have purpose and convinced in my heart that this is who I follow. Otherwise, people, in that situation, you might think you're strong and a follower of God, and you might overcome it. You might overcome it 5 out of 10 times. Some of you, 9 out of 10 times. Some of you, 99 out of 100 times, you might make the right choice. But it is that one fatal error of character or morality that seems to send the world crashing down. And remember, Satan understands image. We are creating the image of God, so he wants to kill, steal, and destroy everything there is about you in your life. Hey, everyone's doing it. It's the way the world is played. It's the way the job is done. It's just another area I kneel on the outside, while inside trying to tell myself, I'm different. I'm different. Okay, here we go. 13. Kind of preachy. Take a big breath. 13. Okay. That's what happened up in Section 124, Row G, 1920 and 21. Now let's go back to the stage. Dudes run down the aisle, up through the tunnel, back up to the stage. King will live forever. We told you guys, there's three guys. They're way up there. Furious with rage. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar. That's how it starts. Now remember what we've talked about Nebuchadnezzar. This is a guy that's already burned people alive on sticks over fire. This is a guy that chopped up king's families in front of them and plucked out their eyes and let them die of old age just so their last visual memory was of their family being chopped into pieces in front of them. This is a guy last chapter that says, if you don't do what I say, you're going to be cut into pieces and your houses are going to be turned to rubble. And this is a guy that has backed it up over and over and over again. You've made that guy, the greatest ruler in the known world, furious with rage, and I might add, probably a lot of embarrassment. So Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold that I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? And these dudes are probably thinking, where is Daniel? Have you noticed? People, I made an art of getting in trouble growing up. And whenever me and four of my buddies got into something and it got called and there was three of us, I'd look around, I'm like, where's Tom? It was Tommy's idea. If I'm going down, he's going down. Where's Daniel in the story? For the first two chapters, he's been the hero. These guys have just been sidekicks. Now all of a sudden, boom, chapter three, it's about them. And people, I don't know where Daniel is. He's serving in the king's palace because he can interpret dreams and the king likes him. So a couple valid ideas. Maybe Daniel, of course, got wind of what was happening. It takes a while to build a 90-foot statue and cover it with gold. And Daniel's like, I'm calling in sick that day. Ain't no way I'm showing up to be part of that mess. Cell phone reception is terrible back then. Probably couldn't get a hold of his buddies, so they just made the trip. Could happen, besides the cell phone part. Maybe Nebuchadnezzar, because he knows Daniel, favoritism, has a conversation. And Daniel goes, King, you know me. I'll serve you politically. But if this is about bowing to your statue, you know I can't do it. And the king's like, Daniel, just stay in the kitchen for this one. Other people say, well, maybe Daniel saw this as simply political. This wasn't spiritual, so Daniel probably bowed. Could happen, but I'm not putting my chips on that one. Daniel seems to be a guy for the first six chapters of his book and the rest of it that makes a solid stand. I don't know where he is, people. I don't know why the Christian life, some seem to get blessed and get through it, and I don't know why others are facing the heat of the flames. I don't know, people. I don't have answers for that one. I know according to chapter 2, whatever you're into right now, the blessings or the flames that you're feeling, it is temporary. This is not our home or our kingdom. So in the midst of that, the king says, I'm giving you a second shot. It's going to play. You're going down. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego reply to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. I'm like, yes, you do. King, we're not going to get into argument about this. If we are thrown into your blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, you've got to underline that, but even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. We know our God is able to save us from it. And even if he doesn't, dude, if we end up bubbling, because that looks hot. And fire, people, has a pretty good record over men in it, over the history of the ages, okay? There's a reason the story's a big deal, because this isn't the norm. If it's like, oh, more guys that just face fire, this all happens every day. It doesn't. And these guys know, I know our God is able to save, and he will take me and save me from it. Or even if he doesn't, he will take me through it. And we know what's in the midst of it, and we know what's on the other side. Our God is more real than the tangible we see in front of us. Because I've convicted, purposed in my heart to follow him, that God is more real than the statues and the flames than you. He is more tangible than what I see in front of it. And I will not be a Christian that lets the fear in front of me dictate whether or not I have obedience. I will not be a Christian that lets that decision of what's best for me dictate whether or not I have obedience. Long before I'm in that boardroom, long before I'm in that meeting, long before I'm on that sales trip, long before I'm in that relationship, long before I'm clicking on that screen, I already want to determine I will not let the situation in front of me alter the God that I serve. So, King, there's no argument here. God can save us. And if he doesn't, it doesn't matter. This is temporary. He can take us through it. Well, this didn't go over good. Then King Nebuchadnezzar, verse 19, just turn up the heat. He was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. And he ordered the furnace heated seven times hotter than usual. And he commanded some of the strongest soldiers of his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Archaeology discovered this is probably more of a big kiln, more of like a little railroad tunnel with one end bricked up. It's more of an open-ended kiln or cave in there that you heat up. It's heated up so hot that the guy's taking them up there. The flames come out and just consume them and they die. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego go tumbling in. Okay, now the crowd's got something to watch. Forget the statue. Check out the three dudes getting thrown. Here it goes. King Nebuchadnezzar 24, leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisor, "Hey, well, weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" And they replied, "Well, certainly, O king." He said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound, unharmed, and the fourth looks like the Son of God. Somebody else jumped in there. Who runs and jumps in there? There's four. And the dudes got close to it, died, but they're walking around in the flames. Tell me you see that. And the fourth looks like the Son of God. It's, I don't know, people. Don't ask me afterwards. I don't know if he's glowing. He's got a crown on. I don't know what it is. There's something noticeably different. Tell me you see that." And then he goes. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and he shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, servants of the Most High God." You might want to underline that. "Come out and come here. What is it you are known by?" Because they're willing to be discovered, because they take a stand in the small things. Now, the king's not going to fall into their God. We're going to show that at the end of this and next chapter by far. But he's now going to know, you got answers that the world's not able to give me. You've proved that twice. There is something in you that the best of the world can offer I still haven't been able to find on my own. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, not traitors, not losers, not outcasts, but servants of the Most High God. That's recognized in you now. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, verse 27. And the satraps, prefects, governors, all those dudes crowded around them. And they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor is the hair of their head singed. The robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. And Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel, who rescued his servants. They trusted in him. They defied the king's command," and underline this, "and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own." Next to that, you might want to write, theme of chapter 3. They were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own. It did not matter what the world offered as success or failure. You were willing to follow regardless of what it meant to you. Therefore, I decree, the people of every nation language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, anybody who says anything against their God, you will now be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble. What is it with this command? He's got a good punishment. It usually works. Because no other God can save in this way. And the king promised Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now, people, when you become a Christian, you do not come forward and we give you a little fire ring. For joining the church, if you're here for 4 weeks in a row, you get the fire ring. Fire will never burn you or anything you own. Congratulations. If you come 3 years in a row, perfect attendance, we'll give you a flood ring. And in California, after 10 years, you get an earthquake ring. But that's tough to come by. That's what God does for his people. No, this is an extraordinary circumstance because most Christians that have ever been put in fire have always died. And people, this is not a story. Well, if I stand for God, once again, it's get rich quick and get promoted. No. Once again, it's a story of stand for God regardless. Can God save you from what you're going through? Totally. Or he can simply take you through what you're going through. And that's his prerogative. However, he wants to get the most out of you to influence the world around you at this time. It's been interesting talking to some people about this. People come up and said, "Hey, I just want to tell you about how this has changed how I'm filling out my school application. Because there's some areas I could definitely fudge a little." Someone else said, "Hey, on a job application, I realized, man, I got a resume I got to redo." You know, they don't go back and check all that. And I made myself a little bit better image than who I am. Talked to a couple that I just respect, a second marriage for both of them, and living just a phenomenal life of serving God. And they said, we had to go back to an alimony hearing last week. And, man, this one was tough. You don't understand the X in this situation and the stuff they say and the lies they make up and the court system and how we're being battered and we're trying to do the right thing. And because of Babylon, we realize this. Full disclosure. They wanted to take a new look at our finances to see if there's anything more they can get. And there's some of what we do that, well, the government and the court wouldn't know about. And it's very easy to say, well, we don't have to show that. But because of this series, we just said, here it is. Every dime, every penny, every nickel we make and what we do and all of our sources of income, there it is. Guess what they did? Yeah, they took more from us. And we left okay. That's not what this was about. It was about choosing not to be part of Babylon. to have a conversation with a couple that I've just grown to love, who wife just comes in and says, you know what, we're so wrapped up in running and owning this business, and yet that's temporary. These kids and what we do with this family, that's eternal. And both of them just seeing that's right. I mean, so much is being put into the company, and yet that in itself is a temporary kingdom. There's nothing wrong with it. Your influence with your employees and what you do with the success of that and how you advance the kingdom, the eternal kingdom, that's great. But I get so caught up in my temporary kingdom that it controls my emotions, my thoughts, my desires, my schedule. And they were talking about, man, we're doing this. What I do for a living is I'm buildings. It's temporary. Got an email from a guy who said, man, I'm applying for a job. Job I really want. My wife and I sat down and said, bottom line, to meet our needs and our expenses and make a little more, man, here's what we would love for that job to offer, X amount. We would love for the offer to be right there. So we prayed about it and prayed about it. And I went through the first interview, the second interview. I went through the third interview, finally came down to the final two or three, and then they finally gave the call and said, you know what, we've chosen you. Initial offer, here's what we want to offer you, and then we can negotiate. And that initial offer was what we wanted plus. And you know what we immediately did? I immediately talked to my wife and said, okay, now it's time to go negotiate. How much more can we get? And we worked out how we're going to negotiate and try to get more on top of that, because that's how it works. And after my conversation and strategy with my wife, I believed I knew what I was going to do. But God had something else in mind. A little voice in my heart said, pull your truck over. I was driving, and so I stopped. At this time, I began to shed some well-deserved tears. And I was shown the light. This light was, who am I to question God's blessing that he has just given me, the job and exceeding the amount that we were praying for? So I immediately went back home and discussed this with my wife, and we both agreed, man, we are definitely living in the philosophy of Babylon. So I went back to the company with no intention to dispute their offer, took it and signed the offer with less on my heart than what I started off with that day. God, I want this. And God said, you know, not just that, I'm going to bless you here. And immediately I go, well, how can I get more than that? Because that's the philosophy of Babylon. God, go, great, I'm glad I could use you for success, but how do I make this about me? Nebuchadnezzar, here's what God said about your dream. You are temporary. God is eternal. You are allowed to write your own script, or you are allowed to be a part of his script. Stuff that will last forever. Real significance that you can never build on your own empire. Wow, that's awesome. How do I make this about me? We'll go. Set up an image. Let everyone bow. Why is my image constantly in conflict with the image of God in my life? I'm a product of Babylon. We've hit them. But lessons from the furnace, first and foremost, is simply this. Christianity is a call to be set apart, not to blend in. Christianity is a call to be set apart, not to blend in. Jesus turned to his follower and said, listen, before you call yourself a Christian, you got to understand, blessed are you when people insult you. I'm out. Ooh, what's your religion have to offer? Well, blessed are you if they insult you or persecute you or falsely say all kinds of evil about you because of me. Oh, where do I sign? Rejoice and be glad in that, because great is your reward in heaven, not the temporary. Because in the same way they persecuted all the prophets who were before you, and Jesus, by the way, will live this out to its fullest. You are the salt of the earth. But if you lose your saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Matthew 5:11-16. Jesus said, look, if you're a follower, you're supposed to be different. You're supposed to be set apart. I don't want placards. I don't want Jesus freaks. I don't want people that stand up and make huge protests in the cubicles and turn people off. But I want you to live a life that demands an explanation. I want you to live a life not just to take a stand, but when people say, what is it about you? And don't you understand? Say, it's not an argument I get into. I'm not going to argue this. I follow a different God. I have different rules. I have answers. The world doesn't have answers for the questions that you're facing. And then even comes to life and death. It's temporary. And the fires I'm facing, he will either save me from, or I can get through this one way or another. Jesus says, you don't light a light and put it under a bowl. You put it out, and it's infectious. And you allow others in your sphere of influence to start to see it. That's why you have your position. That's why you have your job. That's why you are left here on earth. Otherwise, the moment you decided to accept Christ, you would be taken and just start heaven. Why else stay here in this place? He says, because you're infectious. You've got a JC degree disease in your life. No. It's that little Jesus Christ thing. That should be infectious. It's a call to be set apart, not to blend in. So we've talked about it, but it leads to then whose script am I following, mine or God's? If that is my calling and purpose, and these three guys show that, then whose script am I following? Am I writing my own story? Am I the star of the show, or is it God's? I don't know why this God has allowed us all to make life about ourselves if we want. I wish he had more force, spiritual force, to make us do the right things, you know? But he's all, no, that's not the system. You choose. You choose to kneel, you choose to stand, you choose. Then the question that we have to leave with is this: what idols are keeping me from the one true God? What is the area, don't put your Bibles away yet, what is the area, the place in my life that when I'm there, I know I choose that over what God wants? I choose the lust, I choose the sexuality, I choose the relationship, I choose the job, I choose the finances, I choose my own desire other than serving her or serving him. What is that area in your life that you say, when it comes to what God wants, I know this is that idol? And all throughout the scripture, God made it clear. You got an idol set up, you tear it down, and you burn that sucker at all cost, constantly to his people. Why are God's people find their nation in ruin and they're held captive 500 miles away from home? Why? Because for the last 100 years they've been worshiping idols. And God said, prophet after prophet after prophet, saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? And their response is, it's the way the world works. It's the way the world works. And God says, then I'm done with my nation of Israel. And he turns them over to Babylon for this time. It might mean the loss of job. It might mean the loss of more financial gain. It might mean the loss of relationship or finding another one. Those are temporary, people. I know they mean so much to me and you. Because if there's an area that you know I am not Lord of your life in, then that is your idol. Whatever you need to unplug, whatever you need to get rid of, whatever you need accountability, whatever you need to move from it. Because it is not worth sacrificing the eternal for the temporary pleasures that I seek. The way he worked then. People, I really think it's still the way God works now. So, Father, thanks for a story. Three guys who choose to go against the greatest ruler and the crowd simply to say, I have a God, and that's not about my weekends. That is about every aspect of my life. For the areas in our life that we know we are choosing over your way and your will for us, may you give us the strength, the courage, God, your spirit in us, to break those down, to remove them at all cost. And then, God, the strength to walk away. And, God, may you replace it with your light, your love, your salt in our life. In your name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed today's study from God's Word. Pastor Chris will return in a moment with some final comments. For more information, or if you'd like additional copies, please contact us at area code 760-724-6700. Our mailing address is North Coast Church, 1132 North Melrose Drive, Vista, California, 92083. Or visit our website at www.northcoastchurch.com. Now here's Pastor Chris.
David Guzik says, are you waiting for something big before you really start to obey God? Is your life filled with many small compromises, yet you tell yourself that you will stand firm when it really matters? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shows us that small things really do matter to God. I love that. Congratulations, you've all journeyed outside your own gates to come stand and meet in the plain of Dura today. God's never put much emphasis on being part of the crowd. But he says in the midst of that, you have a choice. Is it your script, the temporary one, or his, the eternal one? You are allowed to be a character in his script. Isn't that amazing? Or you can be the star of your own show. The choice is yours. It always has been. Always has been. So one way or another, turn around and greet another character in this play that we call life. And we'll see you guys next week. It's going to be a doozy.